Welcome back to Thursday's Topical Currents. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Bonnie Berman. And Joseph Cooper, recovering from his back injury, is doing much better. Well, what makes the music of the United States tasty? What flavors distinguish it, and where did they originate? Latino musicians have had a profound influence on traditional American musical genres, including jazz, rhythm and blues, rock and roll, and hip-hop. American Sabor, Latinos in the U.S., in U.S. popular music, is a traveling exhibition from the Smithsonian that will open at History Miami on August 6th. Joining us to get a preview of the exhibition and hear about big developments at History Miami is their president and CEO, Ramiro Ortiz. Good afternoon, Ramiro.
Good afternoon, Bonnie, and thanks for having me here.
Well, thanks for being here. And before we go on...
There you go. That's sabor.
You like this?
Listen, for the audience that can't see it, Bonnie is now dancing and swaying her hips to the music.
Hard not to. So while Ricky Martin is playing in the background, Livin' La Vida Loca, I think before we look at the exhibition and the recent expansion, we might begin with a little of your background. So your appointment as president and CEO was just over 4 months ago?
No, it was a year and 4 months
ago. Oh, a year and 4 months ago. Well, congratulations anyway.
Thank you.
Okay. So were you surprised when you got this appointment?
Well, I had retired after a 40-year banking career and got one of those phone calls you get in life, and it was... Ramiro, this is deep, deep center field. You probably shouldn't be playing so much golf. History Miami is doing a national search. Is this something that you might have an interest in? And I corrected them and told them, you know, you're absolutely right. It is deep, deep center field, but let me think about it. And Bonnie, the more I thought about it, the more I liked it. I'm passionate about Miami. Not only was I a banker, but I've been very civically involved in Miami. I had the good fortune of chairing the Greater Miami Chamber, chairing one of the campaigns for United Way. I've been involved with the Orange Bowl Committee, the Nat Moore Foundation, just a lot of...
Were you born here?
I was born originally in Cuba. We left Cuba in 1960.
Okay.
So I'm passionate about Miami, and I love history. So I just thought it'd be the perfect thing to do. At this stage of my life, combining my love of history with my passion for Miami. And then I also thought that there was a vacuum in Miami with a real challenge. Miami is made up, as you know, of so many different cultures, and everybody's preoccupied with the history of their culture, but now we're all here in Miami. And I thought that bringing Miami's history and taking them out to all of those different communities would be something worthwhile.
So just to go over, what is the mission of History Miami?
Well, we think that we're the preeminent storyteller. Our vision is to learn from the past and prepare for the future. But the mission itself is to go ahead and interpret all of those stories, share them with the public, and educate the public on the history of Miami. Our ambition then is to take it one step further, kind of a cause and effect thing. This is what happened. Many historical institutions stop there. Our ambition is to say, as a consequence of that, these are the kinds of things that we should be looking for.
Mm-hmm. We'll get to that more on, you know, what the long-term goals are and what your vision is. But in the meantime, you expanded on the Cultural Plaza into the space of the former Miami Art Museum. Where does the expansion stand right now? Have you moved in there?
We are utilizing that space. We opened up that space in January with an Abraham Lincoln symposium. Which was very well attended. The title of it was Abraham Lincoln and the Constitution, and we did that in partnership with FIU. And then we followed that with a forum, celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Cassius Clay Sonny Liston fight, which took place right here in Miami. Oh, yeah. And yeah, and once again, it was an overflow crowd. We opened up an exhibit called Facing History and Ourselves. At any point in time, we're only exhibiting less than 5% of what we've got in our collection. And we want to use a portion of that space to constantly be sharing with the public items that up to now were just sitting in our collection. So if you think about this, in the former space, we had 40,000 square feet of exhibit space. We're now doubling our exhibit space with the idea of all the time maintaining 2, 3, 4 exhibits running concurrently.
So we have now, should we go on to American Sabor, which is one of your exhibitions, which kind of inaugurated this new hall?
Let's go on to American Sabor.
Okay, so tell us about it. It's the first major exhibition in this new building, your new physical plant. Where's the exhibition from? Who created it?
Well, the exhibition originally was curated by the University of Washington in partnership with the EWM Museum. It in turn went over to the Smithsonian. The Smithsonian is now traveling it as part of their traveling exhibition schedule. And we were fortunate enough that we were one of the cities that they chose for the exhibit.
It's a great choice. It should be here.
Well, it should be here. The exhibit has traveled to San Francisco, Los Angeles, New York, San Antonio, and now it makes its Miami stop.
And how did you develop this relationship with the Smithsonian? How long have you had that?
It's one of the things that we're very, very proud of. We are an affiliate of the Smithsonian. We've been an affiliate of the Smithsonian since 2011. For a museum, that's kind of like the ultimate good
yes.
housekeeping seal of approval.
Right.
What that means, Bonnie, is that they are willing to share some of their exhibits with you. You can use part of their traveling inventory, and it's something that most museums aspire to become.
So this opens on August 6th. Tell us more. Let's see. Do we want to, Larry, just hold on. We need to take a break, and then when we get back from the break, we'll take your call. But I want to know more about the exhibition. Is it interactive? I know there's a jukebox there. I guess people can dance. It's divided into sections. Tell us more about it, what it actually,
well,
you know.
It's all of the above. We want to share the story of great musicians like Tito Puente, Richie Valens, Celia Cruz, towards a more modern era, Carlos Santana, Selena, even Pitbull will have something who represents Miami so well. And it's the impact of that music on the entire United States. We will, in essence, have 3,000 square feet of music. We've got some incredible artifacts that we're going to have there. One of the greatest bassists ever, Cachao Lopez, who's a legend in Hispanic music. We've got his bass. We've got two Latin Grammys that we've borrowed from the family for the exhibit. We've got a whole collection of tropical albums. We've got artifacts from the original salsa queen, Celia Cruz, mm-hmm. including the dress she wore for the inaugural Calle Ocho concert. We've got artifacts from Willie Chirino. We've got drum artifacts from Maná. We've got artifacts from the original Miami Sound Machine, including the accordion that Emilio Stefan used, who, by the way, is our honorary co-chair.
Yes, I see he was involved. What is the, yeah, go ahead.
He's our honorary chair. And that's how he started in life. He had an accordion, and he'd go play at weddings, at bar mitzvahs, at quinces, with a little accordion, and that's how he got started. That accordion will be on display.
Well, that sounds great. We're talking with Ramiro Ortiz. He's the president and CEO of History Miami, and he had a banking experience of over 40 years and a lot of civic involvement in South Florida. We're talking about American Sabor, Latinos, and U.S. Popular Music, which opens at History Miami on August 6th. By the way, their website is historymiami.org. www.theprieminentstorytellers.org. Let's just take a short break, and we'll come back with more. Now, Ramiro, is this the original Miami Sound Machine?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, of course, Gloria Estefan. So why is this exhibition so important to our community, do you think?
Well, before I answer that, I'm going to tell on you, because once again, I'll share with the audience that while that great song was going on, Bonnie was swaying her hips and dancing to the music.
Yeah, regular.
So I think you're answering the question with your actions. You know, it's Miami. And not only has there been so much influence, you know, when you think of the old Latin beats, rumba, cha-cha-cha, mambo, pachanga, those kinds of songs all had influence. Now we're kind of bringing it home. Miami, after all, is 60-some percentile Hispanic. Mm-hmm. So we just think that this will be a big, big hit in Miami. And if we are History Miami Museum, we need to have exhibits that are relevant to the entire community.
Larry wants to say something about Ramiro. Larry, you're on Topical Currents. Welcome.
Hey, it's an absolute pleasure. I have to tell you that 25 years ago, Ramiro was part of, and probably still is part of, the Chamber's Leadership Miami program, and I had the opportunity to participate in it. And kind of naive coming out of college, I walked into a room with 200 people, and I realized there was some place called Ecuador, and some place called Peru, and Argentina, and about 900 other places. Ramiro probably remembers me best as the trophy maker for the fishing tournament, but I have to tell you that we're lucky to have people like Ramiro, and I'm lucky to have known many of them over the years that have stuck by what's important, carried on the tradition of our community, and had the power, if you will, by power I mean the leadership will, to make things happen so that, you know, generations like, I can only tell you this, I turn on the music on Power 96, and it's all in Spanish, and my Jewish kids are sitting in the front seat singing with me, and I have no idea what they're saying, and all I know is I want to turn it off, but then I realize that's not sensitive, but... Thanks, Ramiro, and thanks for your hard work. It's not gone unnoticed.
Larry, thank you, and it's good to hear from you.
Great to talk to you.
Thanks for calling, Larry.
Pleasure. Thank you.
If you do want to speak to Ramiro, our number is 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576. Ramiro, how does History Miami work with other cultural institutions in the area?
We're all about partnerships. Literally, the first week I joined the museum, I started on a tour of getting to know the principals at all of the other museums. The first thing we did, we formed a partnership with the Dade County Library System. We have actually taken a nice amount of programming to the libraries. We did a forum on the Bay of Pigs invasion, and we took that out to four different libraries. We followed that with a forum on the civil rights movement in Miami. We took that out to two different libraries. The Abraham Lincoln Symposium that we did a partnership with FIU's law school for that. We had an exhibit on the architecture of downtown Miami that was in partnership with the UM School of Architecture. We are going to be doing a forum on the Haitian Revolution. We'll be doing that in partnership with the Haitian Museum. We're going to be doing a forum on the Six-Day War. We'll be doing that in partnership with the Jewish Museum. Both Stuart Chase, Stuart is our museum director, and myself.
And he was appointed the same time that you were.
Literally, we started on the same day.
Mm-hmm.
And we're both very, very open to all kinds of partnerships. We're now preparing a symposium that we're going to be doing on World War I. We'll once again be working with FIU and with the New World Symphony Center.
What with the New World Symphony?
We're going to use them as the venue for this.
The New World Center. Okay.
Right. So we are all about partnerships. Personally, I'm all about 1 + 1 = 3. And we're ready to partner up with any and everybody who'd like to work with us.
So you hear that? Romero is looking to work with you if you're out there. By the way, I don't want to forget to mention that there are several events or three events that are part of the American Sabor exhibition. Do you want to just tell us when they are, where they are?
Sure, and they're going to be a lot of fun. Once a month, we have an event called Family Fun Day where the entire museum is open for free to the public. On August the 9th, we will have our Saturday Family Fun Day. It's going to be called Latin Beat Extravaganza. It's going to be a special event for families, and there will be interactive live music, dance presentation, an instrument petting zoo, and I'll leave that open. You have to come to find out what that is. We'll have children's crafts activities around music, and once again, the admission is free. That'll be from 1 to 4. Then we've got a neat event that'll take place on September 6th, Saturday. It'll be called South Sabor Competition, and that's a dance contest. And we're going to do that in partnership. We were talking about partnerships earlier, Bonnie. We'll do that in partnership with some of the local dance schools, and we're going to host a salsa competition for 13 to 17-year-olds. Now, we might make an exception in your case because I saw the way you were moving your hips when the music was started. So you're invited to the competition.
You mean I don't fall in that age range?
And then we are going to have a panel discussion on October the 4th. And this will be a lot of fun. We're having Tito Puente Jr. participating in the panel discussion. Mateo San Martin, who was the creator of the Cubané record label. It was really the first Hispanic music record label in Miami. Carlos Oliva, who had the first very prominent Hispanic band here in Miami called Los Sobrinos del Juez. The moderator is going to be Eloy Cepero. Eloy is considered the dean of Hispanic music. For years, he's had his own radio show, television show, and so forth on Spanish music. So those are events that you might want to mark down. And again, we're talking about August 9th, the Family Fun Day, September 6th, Dance Contest, and October 4th. The exhibit itself will open on August 6th, and that'll run virtually every day through the closing.
I think it's October.
Through the closing of the exhibit, which will be in October.
Right. Well, before we have to go, how do you see the changing cultural scene in Miami?
Well, it's very exciting. The shift in Miami, Miami's starting to recognize the real financial impact of a strong cultural scene. A lot of people try to quantify the cultural scene with dollars and cents, and there's an incredible economic benefit. But even more importantly, it's all about quality of life. If you're going to have a world-class city like Miami is, you've got to have the art museums, the performing arts centers, the opera houses, the history museums, the science museums, the children's museums. You've got to have that kind of cultural experience and for folks who want that intellectual curiosity fulfilled, that's got to be part of the scene of Miami.
And it's happening.
And it's happening.
So I guess I don't have to ask what your long-term goals are for the museum, because really you've been talking about them the whole time we've been here.
More and better.
Well, I want to thank you so much. Ramiro Ortiz is the president and CEO of History Miami. And prior to joining History Miami, Mr. Ortiz was a president and COO of Bank United and SunTrust Bank Miami. He has over 40 years of banking experience and civic involvement in South Florida. And again, History Miami is at 101 West Flagler Street. And it's historymiami.org, and you know who that is in the background?
Celia.
All right. And it's Kimbada?
Right.
Ramiro Ortiz, thank you so much for joining us, and best of luck at History Miami and with the exhibition.
Thank you for having me, Bonnie.
It's been our pleasure. And welcome back to Thursday's Topical Currents, Food and Dining Edition. I'm Bonnie Berman. And joining us now is Cordon Bleu chef, author, syndicated columnist, and our friend Linda Gassenheimer. Welcome, Linda.
Great to be here with you.
Well, listen, first, in the interest of full disclosure, I'm a regular patron at both of our guest restaurants in Sunny Isles, and I'm really happy to see them.
Okay, and I did not know that.
So no, I know you didn't.
I did not know that. Okay, Bonnie, we've heard words like organic, sustainable, vegan, paleo, but this is a new one for me.
Intact.
Intact cuisine.
I'm trying to think what outtact cuisine would
intact.
Mean.
Intact. Okay. So what is it, and how does it work? Well, our guest is Chef Tim Andriola, and he's here to help us out. His new restaurant is Basil Park, and it's in Sunny Isles, and it features intact cooking. It's just two doors down or three doors down from this Timo restaurant. And so, welcome, Tim.
Well, thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Great to see you.
Again. The studio with the cooler full of food. My goodness. And we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Have you ever experienced intact cuisine, or do you have some questions or comments about it? Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN.
And email is radio@WLRN.org.
Okay. And, of course, we also have our favorite wine guy with us, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype. You can read Fred's wine suggestions for my Dinner in Minutes columns in the Herald, but you can also read his wine column that has now changed. There's two sections of the Herald now, and so you can read his wine columns on Saturday. Fred, what are we drinking today?
Well, I thought I'd talk about odd facts about wine and then maybe ask him if there's such a thing as intact wine.
Okay. I'm sure he has an answer for you. Well, so Tim Andriola, you're a very successful restaurant is Timo's, and you have you opened it with your partner, Rodrigo Martinez.
12 years ago.
Wow. 12 years ago.
Yep.
That's a milestone these days in Miami. So now you have the restaurant.
Basil Park.
Yes. So tell us, what is intact cuisine?
Okay. Well, intact cuisine is a style of cooking basically that relates to our body. And we have a design as humans. So the intact philosophy is we want to give our bodies the food that it was designed to eat. That means whole, intact food, grass-fed meat.
But when you say intact food...
Food that hasn't been adulterated, that hasn't been processed.
So it's still in its original form.
Correct.
Okay.
So minimally processed at all. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So give me an example.
Okay. For an example of a processed food would be wheat for pasta, right? When you pulverize that wheat and you grind it down, the nutritional value is diminished in great proportions. Mm-hmm. And when our bodies digest this, our body isn't used to digesting or is not designed to digest food in this manner, this quickly. And it goes into our body and our digestive tract. And a chemical process happens, and it raises our blood sugar level, which is not normal. Our body is...
Well, now people, for example, it's not really a paleo or a vegan or a some of the other diets. It's kind
of a mixture.
It's a
broader philosophy. Yeah.
And the philosophy is that it's got to be real food.
Yeah. Well, paleo does fall under the umbrella of intact food. That's that's more of a design diet plan that works great for some people and might not work specifically good for others, and it might not be the right diet for a long period of time.
So it's a process. It's not a food.
Correct. It's more of a philosophy.
A philosophy. That,
right.
Of the types of foods we all should be eating for good digestion, good health, or whatever.
Correct.
So this is very cutting-edge cuisine, and you've opened a whole beautiful... Your restaurant's beautiful. Why do you think now is the time to offer this type of food?
Well, I think you'll see it everywhere. I mean, if you go to a Whole Foods, it's packed. People want this. There's a demand for healthier, more nutritious food. And we're realizing that slowly as a society and whole, you start to see us staying away from the flour, staying away from the butter, staying away from the sugar. We're learning more. And the more we learn, the more demand there is for this type of cuisine.
So bottom line is taste.
Yeah.
How does this taste? It has to taste
good.
Yes. All right. So now we've got some here. And Bonnie, you've been so busy eating, I haven't heard from you.
That's true.
So I've got this beautiful thing in front of me. It's wrapped. Tell me what this is.
Okay. Well, this is
I'm going to eat it.
This is a take on a traditional Japanese hand roll, which would typically be made with white rice. And we know that when you strip the white with the husk off the brown rice and you get the white rice, it's been processed now. So we want the whole intact grains here. And we substituted white rice for quinoa. And
but it's not the regular quinoa. This is brown.
It's red.
Red quinoa.
Red.
Yes.
Red.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So in there as well, you have a little bit of wild coho salmon. Again, another intact fish. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's not been messed with by nature at all. This is the way.
What makes it a little spicy?
Okay, we make our own homemade sriracha sauce.
That's
that goes
why
on
you
that.
Look, you looked a little askance at me when you saw me eat that. Okay, and there's avocado.
A little bit of avocado, which is another great,
but the thing is,
nutrition.
It's really beautiful. We're going to put it up on the website so people can see what it looks like because it's very, very nice.
I just want to say something. In addition to the food tasting so good, mm-hmm. I'll let you eat for a minute, Linda. Is that Tim in the restaurant? You've extended your whole philosophy to the napkins,
correct?
The flatware,
server's uniform,
the dinnerware. I mean everything.
Yeah.
And everything in the tables even.
Yeah.
I mean, do you want to talk about that?
Well, yeah, we designed it with an open kitchen concept, so we really wanted to have the restaurant reflect what the food was. Clean and simple. That's why, there's no tablecloths on the tables. We brought in some nice booze butcher block tables for all the countertops and the tables, and a beautiful rotisserie from France that just kind of fits.
I wanted
right in
to
there.
Ask you about this. Here's a rotisserie from France. So don't we make them here in the
yes,
States?
Yes, we do. Being an open kitchen, we wanted really something that just kind of stood out, and the one that they made in France
was beautiful.
Yeah, okay. It really caught our eye. I mean, and it roasts the same as any other rotisserie for sure, but.
Well, let's before we go back to the rotisserie, we have some more food here. So tell me what this other food is. There's beef.
Yes.
And so what? Yes. What and so it's beef, wrapped in a lettuce.
The beef that we use at the restaurant is all grass-fed. The American beef, has that genetically modified corn that they're feeding it at the end, and, not really something that our body is designed to eat.
We have grass-fed beef in America, but you're bringing this in from Uruguay.
From Uruguay, correct.
Now, so, why, again, are you bringing it in as opposed to what we have here?
The price point, actually, is it's a little bit more affordable.
To bring it in from Uruguay.
Correct, yeah, because the farmers that are here that are doing it are very boutique. Over there, all the cows grow on eat grass, and that's what their diet, and that's the type of food that we should be eating, is that grass-fed meat. Once you start introducing those foreign things to the livestock here, you know, the genetically modified corn or what have you, you know, it starts to deteriorate the product. Plus, they, you know, there's no steroids or antibiotics to keep these things alive because they're eating what they're supposed to eat, eating what
they don't need these chemicals.
Correct.
And what kind of steak is this?
That is skirt steak.
So skirt steak, and there's mushrooms in here.
Yep, we do a little mushroom confit underneath. So we take some coconut oil, and we submerge.
So coconut oil is not considered good?
Coconut oil
is
good,
it's hard to keep up with all of this.
It is.
Not palm oil. This is coconut oil.
Coconut oil, yeah. We make a confit out of it, submerge them in the coconut oil, and cook it in a slow oven for, you know, 45 minutes, 250 degrees, and pull it out. And they don't lose any size, and they have this great, nice flavor. Flavor that comes out of it.
It's just regular mushrooms cut up into smaller pieces.
Now we cut it up, and then we add a little bit of garlic, ginger, scallion.
Oh, I knew there's something else.
Yeah, some water chestnuts and a little bit of tamari, which is a soy sauce that is gluten free. Most soy sauces on the market, they add wheat to it when they're, you know, brewing it.
Right.
Yeah. So the tamari is free of wheat.
And it's wrapped in a
lettuce
iceberg
cup.
Lettuce.
Yeah.
So iceberg lettuce is back in style now.
Yes. That's good for you.
All right. And then we have something else here.
Yeah, this is
well.
Our number one seller at the restaurant. It's the fish taquitos. So this is a wild-caught mahi right off the coast of Florida here.
Right.
And we sear it on the plancha, so get a little caramelization on the skin. And then that's all folded together with a brown rice tortilla. So instead of a flour tortilla, where it would, you know, you have the flour, the processed flour. This is brown rice, so we've cooked the brown rice and matted it down.
So wait a minute. So I'm looking at this. It looks like a regular tortilla.
It does, and it has a similar taste and texture, but
so
it's
how do
actually
you make it into
a little
flour. I mean, it's what is it?
Okay, this is from a company called Food for Life, and they have a whole product line of these type of normal, sustainable ingredients that are available. So
they take brown rice and they cook
with
it. And then they cook and then they mash it into
a paste and then press it in a tortilla press.
You would never know because it looks like a regular
tortilla.
And it's better
for digestive.
It
actually has a better flavor.
It really does.
I happen to like it better than a corn tortilla.
Okay, so then the sour cream that we dollop on top of that with the guacamole there is not sour cream.
That is,
we've soaked some cashew nuts overnight. And then we puree them with a little bit of lemon juice and a little bit of nutritional yeast. And then we add a probiotic, which is a nice digestive.
Is probiotic a yeast?
Yeah, essentially.
Okay.
So cultures, and we leave it out, much like you would leave out a cream to make a creme fraiche. Leave it out at room temperature for about 12 hours. And it starts to develop this, you know, this taste and texture that is very reminiscent of sour cream.
That's fantastic.
But it's a cashew nut. It's raw and organic, and it's good for you.
Well, it's very, very good. And there's guacamole in here.
Yeah.
And so avocado, obviously, is okay, and tomatoes.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's all very fresh.
Yep.
It's very, you know, you're eating something that you might consider it's heavy, but it isn't. It's very light.
The fish is delicious.
Thank you.
How did you get that smoky flavor on the fish?
Plancha. We have a plancha at the restaurant, and we just, you know, it's basically...
Tell everyone what a plancha is.
Okay, basically a plancha is a grill without any flame. You know, oftentimes when you grill on an open flame, the flame drips down into the fat coming out of the meat drips down into the flame, and then carcinogens come up, and that goes back onto your meat. And so the plancha avoids all
that.
So
this is a flat basically, griddle,
yeah,
sort of
big
thing.
Piece of stainless steel, basically. That
and
gets
it fits over a barbecue, just over the regular stove.
Right, over gas burners
underneath.
Right, so it heats it up to a very high temperature, and it gives you the same searing qualities. It actually works a little bit faster than a grill. It gives you the same caramelization on the meats or fish
but
or on the outside.
But this has stripes on it, so I don't know how you did that on a flat grill.
Magic of the kitchen.
Okay, we're not going to know about that, I guess. Okay, so now... I noticed that your chicken, it's not called free range.
Pasture-raised, yes.
It's called pasture-raised.
Right, that means it actually sees the sun, daylight.
So it's actually out in a pasture.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you know the farm, or is that how?
Yes, correct. Up at Joyce Farms up in North Carolina. So, uh-huh. Yeah.
Because I don't think people realize when they're buying free-range chicken that the United States government, the law, the FDA law is that, I guess the USDA law is that, the chicken has to have access to the outside, which means if there's an open window in the chicken coop, then that's okay. That doesn't mean they go out. It means that they can go out.
So that's what free range means?
Yes. And normally, I've been to several chicken farms. Normally, they don't go out because they have all their feed right there. And all the water is right there inside the farmhouse. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was interesting that you called yours pasture-raised.
Yeah.
I think we need to go to a break.
Okay.
Yes? We'll take a short break here. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, talking about intact cuisine with Chef Tim Andriola. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we've been talking with Chef Tim Andriola about intact cuisine and his new restaurant, Basil Park. He's been explaining to us this cutting-edge cuisine style and how we can enjoy really good food that's also good for us, too. And before we continue, I'd like to give a shout-out to these two restaurants. We talk a lot about restaurants' openings here and some closings, but I'd like to make mention these two restaurants because they've been here for so long. Nino Peretti just celebrated his Cafe Abbracci's 25th anniversary. And what I think is just amazing and wonderful is that his team has been with him since day one, which is truly amazing here. Quite a feat. And also Cindy Hudson and Delia Shirley are celebrating Ortonique on the Mile's 15th anniversary. Mm. So
I remember when they were on Lincoln Road.
Right. I mean, this is just amazing that these restaurants are still full. There's still people going to them, and they're doing a great job. So on Thursday, July 31st, a week from today, they're going to have a special charity dinner there, and all the proceeds are going to go to United Cerebral Palsy of South Florida and Baptist Health Breast Center. So congratulations to both of those restaurants. Well done. All right, so now it's dinner in minutes time, and I checked my dinner with Tim to make sure it was going to be a good, healthy dinner, okay? And Tim
said...
I got the all clear. Okay. Absolutely. It's fragrant fish parcels. Fragrant fish parcels.
So
hard with a mouthful, right? with pearl barley. It's a never-fail way to make a really juicy, flavorful fish because the fish is sealed in a packet. I have some wine and some vegetables and some herbs in that, and it steams in its own juice. And, of course, barley is actually an ancient grain, and it's very simple. So for the fish, I microwave some carrots and onion and mushrooms and a little olive oil, but I guess now I could use
coconut oil.
Okay. Just for a couple of minutes, or if you want, you can sauté them in a skillet. Then you place the vegetables in the center of a piece of either parchment paper or foil. I place the fish fillet on top. It could be any kind of just thin white fish fillet. Some basil leaves and a little white wine. Seal the packet, place it in a 450-degree oven for about 8 to 10 minutes, and that's it. It's so easy and simple. And then when you open the packet, you get this wonderful aroma of the fish and all the vegetables and the wine. And for the barley, I just put it in water, bring it to a boil. I cook for about 20 minutes, drain it, and I toss it with a little olive oil, salt, and pepper. Now that complete, and Tim's smiling, so it's okay. I know it's all right. So the complete recipe and a photo, it's at dinnerinminutes.com. And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. Fred, what are we drinking?
Well, I don't know if you remember Ripley's Believe It or Not, the cartoon that has run in newspapers for 1,000 years.
I'm not going to say whether I remember it, Fred.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, it was, for those of you who don't know, it was a compendium of odd facts of all kinds, like there's a duckling born in Louisiana with four legs and weird stuff like that. Well, Schaefer Vineyard in California is putting out an occasional web page of similarly hard-to-believe facts about wine, and it's really kind of fun. So a couple of examples. A bottle of 1982 Chateau Lafite Rothschild is selling for $1,500, and that's when it's empty.
Empty?
Yeah, it's because wine foragers refill the bottles with cheap wine, recork them, and sell them. And if the bottle was full, it would cost over $3,000. So they make a pretty good profit there. And Chateau Lafite is pretty good stuff. The former CIA director, Leon Panetta, won a bottle of it from a friend by betting that the U.S. could kill Osama bin Laden. So a little bizarre there.
I hope it was filled with the right stuff. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I imagine so, yeah. Another chilling fact, one way that you can catch foragers of wine made before 1945 is to test them for cesium-137. That's a radioactive element that didn't exist on the planet before the bombing of Hiroshima, and now every bottle of wine in the world has it.
Oh, that makes us feel good.
Doesn't that make you feel good?
Yeah.
For you lonely wine fans, there's now an online dating service for wine lovers. It's called Vinalove, I guess you'd say, .com, VINEALOVE.com. And it sounds promising. One of its sponsors is nakedwines.com. So that's another
okay,
one you can
look up. This is public radio. Do you know that? All right. I should know that.
Turns out wine has been around for a really long time. There's new scientific dating techniques that have pushed back the origin of wine to nearly 7,000 BC, which is about the same time that the wheel was invented. So it's been around a long time.
That's and how they invented the wheel.
Who deciphered the oldest Hebrew inscription ever found from several centuries BC say it translates as a complaint about cheap wine. In ancient Greece around 100 BC, women hid their graying hair by dyeing it with red wine. Bonnie, did you ever try that, or don't you even have any gray hair?
No, I don't. I'm very fortunate about that, Fred. Thanks for asking.
Glad to hear it.
It's a little too much information here, Fred.
Okay, one last one. People say old vines make the best wine, and in California, the oldest grapes, Zinfandel, have vines that are 140 years old, but in France, the oldest living vines are 344 years old, meaning they were planted in 1668, so that's an old vine. And you can find all these facts by going online and Googling Schaefer Line on Wine, and you can even go to Amazon.com and buy a book about it. So, Tim, I wanted to ask you, what's your philosophy in wines? I see you do old world wines, mostly organic, that sort of thing.
Yes, yeah. They're not all organic, but a lot of the boutique wineries that we do buy from do have the same philosophy of, you know, caring for the soil and you know, taking care, and the same, you know, standards that a organic winery would, but they're small wineries, and to get certified organic costs a couple bucks, so it's a little challenging for some of these small guys to do it.
Do you think organic wines taste better?
I don't necessarily say yes or no. I think that's, you know, comes with personal preference and taste, but I know that some of them have, you know, they taste equally or if not better than non-organic.
I see you also have a line of sakes. So do you have some nice sake wine or sake food pairings?
Yeah, we'd love to. A lot of our food is it has a little spice to it, or it has some depth to it, and the sake does pair really nice with it. So,
and large format beers, so you're really a full service place.
Well, yeah, we support the local community too. One of our beers that we feature is Michael's Genuine. I'm sure everybody knows Michael Schwartz, and so his beer comes in the large brew format as well. So,
wow, I didn't know he was making beer.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I didn't know he was making beer. Go ahead, Fred.
Oh, I didn't either, actually. Yeah, craft beers are big all over the country these days. In fact, I see that they're even selling them in Europe now. Europe is actually buying American beer for the first time in a few centuries.
Yeah, and we also have another one that's on our that we pour on tap, which is the Monk in the Trunk, which is located right up there in Jupiter, Florida.
Okay. So before we finish with all of this wine, and we're going to only have about a minute or two left, we have to go to the dessert because we can't leave without it.
Yes, and I was going to say, Linda, wait till you taste the desserts there.
I have been there, so
so you know the dessert.
Well, now let me ask you something. You have something called a raw chocolate pâté. So,
correct.
What's raw chocolate?
Raw cacao, the cacao bean of the chocolate.
What do you mean raw cacao?
Unprocessed. It doesn't have the sugar added to it, which is typical and regular.
Is this the cocoa powder you're having, or is this a bean that you're actually going to process yourself?
Well, we use both. the cacao nibs, which is the cocoa bean that's kind of like pulverized a little bit, and then the cacao powder, which is just pulverized just a little bit further.
Because some of the chocolate cocoa powder has an alkaline or has some chemicals in it.
Yeah, they do a lot with preservation with that. But anyway, this one is the raw cacao, and we fold it in. We mix it with avocado, so it kind of gives it the base and texture of a pate, but it's actually pretty good for you.
Well, I have to tell you, I did taste it. It's nice and creamy and delicious. And I liked it. You have to like really dark chocolate, which makes it really delicious. Yeah. And you have lots of other delicious recipes there. But we're out of time.
Oh. Well, thank you for having me.
It's been wonderful. It's been a very, very tasty week. Chef Tim Andriola, thank you so much for joining us.
It was my pleasure.
And thank you for the delicious food you've
thank
got.
Thank you, Tim.
Everyone in the station waiting to taste all your food that you've brought.
They've been tasting.
In a big cooler he brought it. Basil Park is located at 17608 Collins Avenue. That's Sunny Isles. And it's open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Fred Tasker, great advice as always.
Joe, come back soon.
Yes. He's doing better.
Oh, good. Glad to hear he's doing better. Bonnie, you ate very well today.
Thank you.
Next week, we're going to be introducing Miami Spice Month. It's coming up now with Bill Talbert, CEO of the Greater Miami Convention and Visitors Bureau, and 50 Eggs Restaurant Group CEO John Kunkel. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.
And we thank you for joining us today. Our producer is Richard Ives, with technical direction from our online producer, Paul Leary. We have free audio archives, downloads at our website, WLRN.org, and more information, links, and photos at the Topical Currents Facebook page. That's facebook.com/topicalcurrents. Watch that. Tomorrow at this time, please join Ed Bell for another edition of South Florida Arts Beat. Monday, we return with a Topical Currents rebroadcast. We explore college campus free speech rights. Some 65% of colleges have speech codes which wouldn't pass a First Amendment challenge. Bonnie Berman, hoping you have a great several days, a great weekend. Please stay tuned for Here and Now, up next from NPR News.